My name is Lieutenant Colonel Justin Cuff, and I am today's host for Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of the Operations Group at the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, as part of the NTC Warriors Chronicles. The Gauntlet drives warfighting by talking to leaders from our joint force, talking about the crucible of ground combat, leadership, training, and fighting at the crown jewel of the Army. Today, I'm sitting down with Battalion Commander Tim Martin of the 316 Field Artillery Battalion to discuss Rotation 2602, including how this rotation differed from our typical rotation. It's great to have Thunder 6 on the net today with Tim Martin. It should be an exciting conversation. We talk about transformation and contact. Hey, Tim, just for the audience, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Tim Martin. I'm the battalion commander for 316 Field Artillery. I also dual head as the 5th Squad for 21 ABCT Blackjack Brigade. And this was my second NTC rotation as a battalion commander. We went through a traditional NTC rotation in November of 2024 and then finished up with this rotation in November of 2025. Obviously, two very different rotations, but glad to be on talking to you today.
Tim and I've known each other for years, and really this is the first transformation and contact rotation for the National Training Center, so 2602. Tim, just to open it up, do you want to kind of talk about your formation and the difference from what maybe you came in that first rotation in 24 and then for this rotation in 2602?
So 2502, we were very much a traditional artillery battalion construct, fire support construct. We were on a lot of legacy equipment and systems. We did have the newer Paladin versions. We had the M7 BFIS and the Alpha 7 Paladins. And then in June of this last year, June of 2025, we were designated by Chief of Staff of the Army to be the first ABCT Transformation and Contact Formation. And really from that point, everything changed. We were rapidly fielded to make us a more modern warfighting system. So we received new communications equipment with 162 with the MUOS radios. It's mobile user objective system radios. So a different type of radio system. We received star shields at every single battalion command node and several in the brigade. The tank formations experimented with what type of formation that they were going to operate with. And then additionally, what was unique about the battalion is we went from a 3x6 artillery, traditional ABCT artillery DS battalion, to a 2x8 construct. So two batteries of 8 howitzers apiece. And then we got a additional battery of 8 MLRS launchers. So all this happened in a very short amount of time. So we really had to adapt how our train up looked between June and September, October of 2025. And then how we're going to fight in NTC as part of a new TIC construct. Additionally, from the brigade, we got a variety of different drones. We had FMV drone capabilities in every single maneuver battalion and in the brigade headquarters as part of the multifunctional strike troop, which is a new construct that the ABCTs are experimenting with that allows them a sense and strike capability at the brigade level. So really just dramatic changes to how we were operating between the 2 years.
Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. Like I said, a lot of new technology out here, and then come to the crown jewel and really put it in the dirt and test it was a great opportunity. And I also know they modified your battalion a little bit. They added a launch effects platoon, right? Can you describe that?
When we stood down our Charlie battery to create the two, Alpha and Bravo were the two 8-gun batteries, we cobbled together what we called a launched effects platoon. The idea of the launched effects platoon is that they have an organic sensor to strike capability, precision sensor to strike capability within the battalion. So what we were experimenting with was much, much smaller version of a cruise missile. So we had that within the organization. You know, kind of the guiding principle from 1st Cavalry Division was the wave concept. And so the way that 1st Cavalry Division sees its warfighting framework being is that in the depth of the battle space, we have wave one, which is detect, right? What are we using to detect the enemy as they're entering into zone? Wave two is suppress. And in a BCT, suppression would be a cannon artillery or rocket artillery, some sort of non-precision effect that you're putting on the enemy to kind of fix them into place. And then wave three is the finishing fires. And General Felty, the division commander of 1st Cavalry Division, sees finishing fires as being the precision portion of it. So whether that's the, you know, a lethal drone or X-Cal round or whatever it is, something that we can use to apply a precision lethal effect onto an enemy formation throughout the battle space of the brigade. So the point to it is that it allowed us the capability of completing all three waves within the battalion itself, which was really unique for us. And I don't think it's something that most other organizations have practiced with in the ABCT realm.
Think about a traditional FA battalion with 18 paladins. That's really what it would bring to the fight. And now you're bringing such more capable firepower at range, right? And destruction, but also with the loitering munitions, some other unique targeting capability for the battalion.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we gained, just depth. We were able to see pretty reliably out into the deeper areas in front of the brigade between the flot and the CFL or whatever we want to call it in the construct of the NTC rotation. But that was really a game changer for us in 2602.
Yeah, and just one thing before we kind of move off the technology, anything for the fire supporters out there? Because I know there's, I'm sure, a 13 Fox listening saying, hey, what new piece of equipment did I have to fight?
The fire support teams, depending on the battalion, some of them had drones. But I think that from a fire support team perspective, I really feel like that's the future of the 13 Fox community. I think that if we can get drones with a reliable target acquisition capability attached to them, then we become less reliant on the actual optics. Really, they become much more lethal at much, much greater ranges as well.
No, right. And we talked about that, you know, during the rotation. What is a future fire supporter really look like, or what capability could he or she bring to the battlefield, right? And if we can see that the future of UAS with the fire supporters could really help them, you know, gain another edge in the fight.
Absolutely. I think that's the area out of all of the areas of growth within the fires, the 13 Bravos, Juliets, Romeos, and Foxes. I think the Foxes are looking in short order at the most dramatic change of all the key MOSs in the fires world.
Yeah, right, because it's potentially a transformation there of that MOS of really what are the responsibilities that they need to train at. And looking back at your rotation, really going back to the comms package, right? Really, that's probably the biggest game changer for the organization. So as we see units are challenged out here at the National Training Center just to maintain reliable comms, not just voice communications, right, but digital communications for the fires enterprise. It seemed like the MUOS really probably solved a lot of those challenges that we've seen out here.
MUOS in the fire support world is the way of the future, or the C2 architecture. I think MUOS is the future. I mean, we were able to talk pretty clear and pretty reliably. I think the biggest issue that we had with the MUOS systems at NTC was just our own lack of familiarity with it. I guess it was just not something that we trained on in Fort Hood. We got them after we had already completed table 15s. So we didn't really have a chance to get them out to the field prior to coming to NTC. The MUOS are much more capable, but they're not like a beginner's level radio system. And so I think that any of the challenges that we had with MUOS were predominantly just because we just didn't know the systems very well. I think that, you know, future TIC brigades coming through, I think that they're going to be even dramatically more improved just because they've had much, much longer to train off of the MUOS systems. The other challenge that we had with MUOS was just because of the timeline for when they were fielded and when we came out to NTC, we didn't have them installed into the vehicles. Probably not ideal for an armor brigade combat team. So it did add a little bit of challenge having to dismount the radio system, set up the antennas, things that you wouldn't normally have to do in an ABCT that we had to do just because of the timeline for fielding.
No, exactly. And like you said, it's those sets and reps that, you know, matter at the end of the day, no matter what piece of equipment we have. The more reps and sets we get at home station or here at the National Training Center will just make us more proficient. And so I concur with you. I think over time we'll see that MUOS standard, you know, grow to even be more effective. So we've kind of described kind of the organization and what you had coming into 2602. Based off what you had, how did that change how you thought you were going to fight fires in this new kind of construct?
Had a general concept of how we were going to operate the battalion, and then it probably changed every day that we were actually out here fighting. You know, from a broader like blackjack perspective, if I had to put what the secret sauce on the TIC rotation in 2602, I would say it was our ability to see the battlefield more completely. An example that I would give is when we went through rotation 2502, we were still operating predominantly analog. And so, you know, when we're updating unit locations in the brigade main, you know, we have the sticky icons and we're putting them on an analog map. In 2602, all of that was digital. So we were in real time looking at every single unit that was operating with their MMCS on. And we could very quickly kind of see the risk and opportunities. And so we were able to like rapidly synchronize and dynamically synchronize operations, which we were just not able to do in the past, just because the picture was much, much clearer in 2602. And that enabled us to operate at a much higher level of tempo. Like any NTC rotation, some of it's kind of a blur looking back on it, but I feel like we were on the attack, like most days we were attacking. And we were able to cover a lot of ground in a relatively short amount of time. And all that was kind of enabled by the C2 architecture of the brigade. From a battalion perspective, I had a very general concept of how I wanted to apply the MLRS battery, and it didn't really hold true. So my initial concept of how I wanted to use the MLRS battery was I wanted to use the multifunctional strike troop, this organization built out of Hyde from the brigade that had a lot of the drone capability, as like the observer in the brigade's deep area, looking for whatever it was, some of the one-off systems to do like the true targeting. You know, how am I degrading indirect fire capabilities, IADs, enabling operations for the brigade? That didn't really hold true. They weren't really the observer for the MLRS like we thought they were going to be. But we did use other observation assets, some of the other targeting capability that the division brought to bear for us. Conceptually, the MLRS battery remained the same. We did use them to degrade a lot of the IADs, to attack some of the C2 capability in the enemy, to degrade some of their indirect fires capability. And then also to, I would say, like disrupt the enemy's ability as they're coming into zone. General concept held true, but just maybe not fully flushed out. The cannons, I always kind of envision using the cannons to enable the close, right? So to get them right in front of where the battalions were operating, push the enemy out of their little hidey hole positions they like to get in to get keyhole shots or flank shots as the maneuver battalions are coming through, and try to preserve as much combat power for the maneuver battalions as I could. So I figured if I degrade them to push them out of their defensive positions, I could make it a more fair fight for the tank battalions. So I get them in the open, the T-90s, T-72s. I know that they're less capable of firing on the move than our tanks are. So that was the goal with the two howitzer batteries. How it played out was probably about the same. I don't think we were as effective as I thought we were going to be, but I think conceptually that's how it played out through the rotation.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think we talked about it a lot, too, is like those cannons really provide you that local fire superiority in that division wave concept, right, that you can suppress an objective to allow that maneuver to get into a position of advantage to then really let them, you know, do their direct fire actions on the objective. I think we were able to see that with those two batteries, that suppressive effects on the objectives, but also what the cannons also provide, right? Are those special munitions when you need them, right? With sometimes the rockets don't have that capability yet, but the rockets let you reach out and, like you said, touch someone at distance to order to shape kind of future objectives in that either division near fight or, you know, your deep fight. But no, I agree with how you kind of fought it there. And it's just unique because we're not used to being able to have that where we'd have to go ask the division for support. You now have those tools at your capability to use, right? And like you said, going back to that C2 structure, that allows you to make those rapid decisions to have those effects and take some risk at time, right? But also use those opportunities when they come available because you can see yourself, but also see the enemy, which is important.
If I had to look at one of the areas I was probably the most challenged with the MLRS battery was just the basics of its employment. So I'm not like a lot of Paladin battalion commanders. I have a functional understanding of rocket artillery, but not a detailed understanding of rocket artillery. We initially positioned them in locations that I thought would be very survivable. And I think they were. We didn't lose a lot of MLRS systems because of indirect fire or direct fire. But the problem was they were too close. So we were constantly running into min range issues with the MLRS battery. And truth be told, the way that we got around that as the rotation progressed is we just didn't move them, as we would reposition them for survivability. If I could do it again with the MLRS battery, I would have positioned them initially much, much further back. I guess better understood what that min range looked like and how it would actually play out in the fight, because a lot of the missions that we were initially sending down to Baker 218 FA were being denied just because they violated the min range. And then we had to go into an alternate shooter of one of the cannon batteries, which was good, but still not as effective. So I think that was just my lesson learned. You know, it should have taken a little bit more time to study up on how I was going to position them. And I guess I got it probably a little too aggressive early on. I wasn't able to bring them fully into bear until much later in the rotation.
Yeah, no, but that's a great point, right? As we look at composite battalions, what does that makeup look like? And we have to think a little bit outside the box, right, of how we're going to fight it together versus a traditional MLRS battalion versus a cannon battalion. When we, you know, conglomerate them into one, just the resources and the planning factors that they bring to bear. But no, like I said, I think that's a good point for anyone out there to just think about it. If you get something like that, or if it's just an MLRS battery that's attached to your brigade or something, that's a planning factor you've got to take into account that sometimes we traditionally don't think of just because cannons with a shorter range. Hey, on the sustainment side, Tim, I know it was challenging to kind of replicate that. If you were going in and looking at your sustainment footprint, how would that have had to change to be able to support that composite battalion?
I think if I had to go back 6 months before the rotation, I probably should have taken a more detailed look at my sustainment fleet in general. You know, I have a fantastic FSC commander. You know, FSCs are always burdened by having to do, you know, multiple things in garrison. And sometimes their own maintenance of their own equipment takes a little bit of a wayside. We went in at not the best PLS slant, so we were already kind of hindered by our organic haul capability. And I knew that Baker 218, they don't operate on a FSC construct. They have like an ammo platoon. So they're going to bring like their own ammo platoon forward. I think we were able to sustain operations for the period of time that we were fighting, knowing that it was basically going to be an 8 or 10 day operation. We were kind of at the limit of our human ability to continue sustainment operations at the pace we were going. And it's probably something I didn't appreciate until after we came out of the rotation. I really saw like the impact that it had on distro. If we were to continue this on as a composite in the future, I would look at not only how the battalion is sustaining those two different types of batteries, but also like how is the division sustaining the battalion? For anybody that's participated in a warfighter exercise, if you want to sustain that rate of fire to accomplish the fire support tasks you want to accomplish with them, then it really just becomes a math problem about how many rocket pods you can get forward. Probably the answer is somewhere in like, you know, caching ammunition in positions of advantage. The ability of my FSC commander really kind of held things in place as long as we needed them held in place, if that makes sense.
I think you guys overcame that challenge, you know, and fought through that. And caches are a way to do that. And we see that here at the National Training Center as an effective tool that if you're limited by PLSs or other means, that is a way to kind of help balance the ammunition challenge that every unit faces out here. But it is a challenge that, as you said, you kind of have to think through before you get here. And have a, you know, a pretty good plan, because that is the tail that, you know, causing catastrophic failure and culmination at some point during the fight, just the ammunition consumption.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to the point of the sustainment piece, when we talk about targeting, at least when the shadow went away in most of the ABCTs or all the ABCTs, the detect portion became the harder portion. You're trying to request division assets and do a bunch of different things. It definitely was that case for us in 2502. The detect was the hardest part. Phrase that gets thrown around a lot is the transparent battlefield. And now everybody has a FMV drone and we have divisions that are providing, you know, real-time feedback to what's happening in almost to like section level detail of what the enemy is doing. I think the harder portion is going to be the decide. Because in a world of infinite targets, but not infinite ammunition, like, how do you really get at the maximum effect that you want to have if you can't just shoot everything? My challenge on day one of the fight was I was shooting everything. And some of that was by design, as I wanted to try to get as many repetitions as possible to get the kill chain moving early in the rotation. The downtrace effect of that was we very, very quickly outshot our ability to resupply ammunition to the guns. We didn't put ourselves in a position where we would have affected the brigade's operation, but had we kind of continued on in that way, potentially we would have jeopardized the tempo of the brigade just by having to resupply ammunition.
Yeah, right. And to your point, it's a simple math problem sometimes, right? And it's supply and demand, huge demand of targets, right? The supplies, we always kind of have the limb factor, then that's where we have to manage. And to your point, I think as you and I talked about it, we were trying to early on push that just to get the machine kind of going. I think as it got later in the fight, you became more disciplined on, you know, your high payoff target list and able to make those choices in the supply versus demand kind of construct that we always struggle with out here in the fight.
What I would recommend battalions operating in the future, coming through probably 2502, I had still a different mindset about it, but in NTC rotations I've done in the past, you know, I think we fixate a little bit on like the bespoke enemy weapon systems, kind of niche equipment that the enemy might have. And that's important. But, you know, what I operated in 2502 and 2602 is let's kill the things that are killing us, right? So like it's all that stuff that's going to wipe out, you know, a company of tanks before it can get to a position of covering concealment or whatever. I would say from fist cords coming through in the future, I would take a look at that. Is like, how are you killing the things that's going to make a difference to the maneuver battalion commanders on the field? Like, what are you doing to kind of set the conditions before the first manned tank crosses the line of departure? Just some things that I dealt with in 2502 and 2602 that I would recommend to fist cords in the future.
No, and that's kind of a shift, right, of what we've seen. And I think as we've seen out here on the, you know, on the Wolf team, of how do we make that, you know, shift in our thinking, right? Now, division is going to be the unit of action, really trying to shape and take care of some of those things in front of us. What's the problem set we need to solve for the brigade, to your point? And that's something as we encourage fire supporters out here, is what is that true HPTL that we're trying to have effects on the battlefield? And it's different than what we saw 2 or 3 years ago, right? And it's something we've got to take into consideration as we go forward. And then leverage division to help us shape some of those other effects that we're trying to get after.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, one thing that we were probably challenged on in 2602 is our ability to communicate our needs to division. You realize very quickly that you and division are operating off of two different timelines. Like, in the brigade, you know, you're targeting timelines, you know, the next 24 to 36 hours, potentially even less than that. And division is operating off of a different timeline. So you have to be really good about communicating your needs in real time to your headquarters. And it was something that we struggled with in 2602. And there was a few times I was like, why aren't they giving me this asset? Or why are they holding this back? Not realizing that I probably didn't make a super convincing case for why it was decisive to me in that moment. So again, you know, lessons learned for fist cords coming through in the future is think through, like, how are you going to communicate what you need in real time with your headquarters? Because it's not as easy as when you do the practice runs, CPXs in home station before you show up to NTC.
No, exactly. You know, how are we communicating our risk to that, you know, DeVardi commander or, you know, G3 to make sure they understand the assets we need and at the proper time and space, right? And you and I talked about it, you know, the targeting process at the brigade level is challenging just based off kind of the timings like you just mentioned, and also just the process. I think you did a really good job of kind of synchronizing that as best you could in that all-arms kind of working group to be able to push those requests to division, but making it more of a, not necessarily, hey, targeting, but hey, how are we synchronizing these assets or what do we need at the right time to enable the maneuver brigade?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, awesome. Hey, just to kind of wrap things up as we look at it, not many battalion commanders or fist cords get two reps at coming out of the National Training Center, both kind of different, like we mentioned before. But looking back or based off your experience, if you had a future field artillery battalion commander coming in and or fist cord, either things you would say, hey, I would definitely kind of focus on or think about before I got here, or maybe in the training progression, some things that, hey, I'd have my unit kind of focus on that I've seen kind of either both iterations that we were challenged on or new thoughts you've had after you've kind of reflected on your rotation?
One thing I've thought a lot about since rotation 2602 was the position of the fifth scored, right? And you tend to go where you feel the most comfortable. I love the ABCT. I love the hooking and jabbing of the brigade talk. I love watching units maneuver onto the objective. Like, that is my happy place. And it's the place I feel the most comfortable. It's a place I feel like I am like in the decisive engagement, but not realizing that, like, as a battalion commander, you have a wide swath of things that you're responsible for, right? And you have a lot of people that really want and need your attention. There was a couple of days where you and I talked and you're like, hey, you need to get down to the FA battalion headquarters. And at first I was kind of like, I'm sure they're fine. I'm sure they're fine. But it's not necessarily about being fine or not. It's that they want and deserve your attention. As for the fist cords that are coming through this, just check your blind spots to make sure that you're providing everybody an equal version of your presence. You're present for the entirety of your formation as best as you can be, and that you're not fixated on the one thing that you just really, really enjoy the most, be it sustainment or FA battalion operations or brigade operations or fire support, whatever role that we have. And some of that's also dictated by your boss, right? What I would also offer is when you go to LTP, and I found it to be true both times at NTC, if you're going to say you're going to spend 90% of your time in brigade, which is fine, you know, that's whatever, as long as you're not neglecting the other parts of your responsibility, you are the senior staff officer in the room, right? You might as well just own the role, right? So you might as well be comfortable making decisions and telling the S3 and XO what to do. And like, you're the lieutenant colonel and they're majors. Like, they're very talented majors, they're future battalion commanders, but you're a battalion commander. So like, I would just offer that, like, they're looking at you for guidance. They're looking at you for expertise. They're looking at you for direction. And if you can give that to them, then I think that you're very value added to the brigade operation, because it can't all just fall under the brigade commander. You know, he's one guy and there's a lot of stuff that's being asked of him.
And true to that, like, we've seen a lot of fist courts come in and kind of, like you said, that senior mentor on the staff, right? But really that DCO role that you're kind of filling too, of being able to help the staff and help that brigade commander visualize. I think everyone struggles. I struggled when I came out here. You know, you're balancing your time and efforts. And as I tell, you know, all of fist cords and battalion commanders, that's something definitely, and you, I've talked about it, you've got to think through, what does that battle rhythm look like? Or touch points that you can talk to the FA battalion, because to your point, they can generally function, but they need a little bit of TLC every once in a while, just to make sure they're on azimuth and make sure they have a clean sight picture of what the brigade wants them to do. So it is a balancing act that I think, based off our breadth and depth of all the requirements that a fist cord and FA battalion commander on the battlefield is required to do, how do we balance that? And there's some talent management, you know, depending on how your brigade commander sees the world, you got to balance too. So there's not a set answer, but it's one that we will all kind of always try to balance and struggle with to make sure we're providing those effects and we're that customer service organization that they expect.
I would say my first NTC rotation, I was less than 3 months in command. And you know, I had to sit down with my supported brigade and say, like, hey, sir, what do you see this relationship looking like? We had an idea, we had a concept, and then we kind of developed the concept in time. You know, obviously, like, you're not by title the DCO, but most brigade commanders want to have a lieutenant colonel up there you are in the trust circle. So, like, you're able to provide good, solid feedback on operations, on talk through courses of action with him. You're not peers, obviously he's your boss, but you're much closer to a peer relationship than he is with the S3 or XO. So you hold a really special place to them. And I would just say, like, embrace that spot, but not at the cost of everything else that you're responsible for. Other lessons I would offer, regardless of the transformation and contact piece, the basics, the fundamentals are still the same. So if you can get a battery able to execute the occupation standards, fire mission standards, according to what the DOT 8 and the Red Book is saying that you need to do, like, you're probably 80% of the solution is complete. If you can go through really robust and challenging tables before you show up to NTC, and you're holding people to the DOT 8 standard, like, that's going to win the day for you. Like, more times than not. And I know, you know, most of the people that are probably listening to this are battalion commanders, so this might be obvious to you. It does hold true, and it holds true both times I've been to NTC. The fundamentals at the unit, the section, the platoon, the battery level are really what makes the most difference. Because I mean, you can have an untrained staff and, you know, they might make life hard on you, but they're not going to lose the fight for you. But if you have an untrained battery or platoon, like they probably will lose the fight for you. You know, the converse is also true that, you know, they're going to win the fight for you if they're really highly trained. They're going to do amazing things when exactly when you need them to do it. Focus on the fundamentals. If you know that you're going to get this shiny new tick equipment, try to get it as early and incorporate it as much as possible into your training tables before you come out to NTC. But like none of that negates the doctrinal standards that we all have to abide by as part of training before we even show up. So hold people to account and they're going to do phenomenal things for you when you come to the box.
Just the fundamentals and how important they are. That technology may change it, the way we do it, but those base fundamentals are always going to, you know, be there to help us. And through your table progression, holding them to that standard, getting through as many tables as you can, those reps and sets like we talked about earlier really come into play, and that's where you're going to make, you know, see the biggest difference. And we've seen that, and you and I talked, you know, the difference in coming out table 12 qualified or 15 or 18 could be 2 or 3 or, you know, up to 5 minutes fire mission processing time, right? To those fundamentals you talk about, and you and I talked about, you know, from, you know, your technical rehearsals and, you know, all those things will help you get that fire mission processing down. Because that's at the end of the day, it's being in position ready to fire at that right time and delivering that munition in that right time and space for that maneuver unit so they can, you know, kill the enemy in close combat. But that's what it all boils down to. Hey, Tim, it's been great talking with you today. Like I said, learning and getting better, and that's what it's all about when we come out here to the crucible of ground combat of what are the fundamentals that we're adhering to, how do we get better out here and really learn and see what our organization's about. So we want to thank Lieutenant Colonel Tim Martin for your time and exceptional insight today. Pump for the future of our Army and the innovative ways in which we're preparing for the future. As always, our observer coach trainers are on your team, and I invite you to look at our latest productions and subscribe to our TAC Talks on YouTube or Quick Hitting Lessons. Thanks for listening to Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, brought to you by the Warrior Chronicles.